let's welcome back now David Cash of the EPA. He's the administrator for the New England region, which is Region 1. David, welcome back.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
So there's a lot that we could talk about, and we're mostly going to focus today on these things called forever chemicals, which are toxic even in little amounts, but basically don't go away and have been in a lot of products. Nonstick pans is one example.
Exactly.
Fireproofing sometimes. Okay. But I want to ask you to start. Last time we talked to you, you just started the job. It was back in February.
Yeah.
These feel like a big deal, but you must have a lot of big deals on your plate. How big is the fire hose you're drinking from right now?
Actually, there's several fire hoses.
Oh, my.
That I'm drinking from, and it's all exciting. The Biden-Harris administration is moving really quickly on so many important issues that affect people's lives every day, whether it's climate change, environmental justice, water quality, air quality. How do we get clean school buses picking up kids in the morning so they're not breathing in diesel? Big air regulation packages. I mean, we're moving I used to say all cylinders. We're moving on lots of batteries here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know what the engine replacement
exactly.
for all, but yeah. All right, so that begs the question. We've got these forever chemicals. Yeah. The acronym that usually gets used is PFAS or PFAS.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we focusing on this thing that's measured in parts per trillion when you're talking about some of these massive issues? Tell me about this PFAS thing.
Well, public health and the health of our drinking water is a massive issue. It's how people interact with the environment every day. And our goal is that when you turn on your tap in the morning, when a family turns on their tap, they're not worried about the water that they're drinking. And so PFAS have been chemicals that have been around since the 1940s, as you mentioned. They have productive uses in products, whether it's in water-resistant materials or stain-proofed carpets or in firefighting materials, right? So they've been used quite a lot, and it's exactly their qualities that are difficult to break down that make them these forever chemicals.
So how does something that made my pan not stick wind up being a threat to my drinking water?
Because many of these chemicals, whether they're post-production or through the manufacturing process, can get released into the environment and make it into groundwater, make it into the air, make it into soils. And so this was an issue that's been bubbling up for a long time. And the last administration, even in the face of mounting evidence, didn't focus on it. And when our new administrator came in, Michael Regan, he put PFAS at the top of our priority agenda.
It is at the top.
It is. He created a council shortly after he came on board that had scientists and our top policymakers on it. We traveled around the country. We talked to our state stakeholders, industry, and basically came up with a roadmap, a strategic PFAS strategic roadmap. And that roadmap has three big pillars. One is on research, kind of answering the questions that you started out with. How did we get here? Where do these chemicals come from? What's the pathways that get them into our body? And if they are in our body, what kind of risks do we face? And we already know and are knowing more and more as the science progresses that there are can be health problems, whether it's to your immune system or to your hormonal system, developmental effects. There's some increased risks of different kinds of cancers. These are things that are becoming more and more obvious as we are devoting research into our science. So research is really critical here. The second pillar is on restricting. How do we keep the PFAS out of these water bodies, out of our air,
out
of our body bodies, exactly. And that's partly what I think prompted this discussion today is the new health advisories that the EPA has released. And that's exactly part of the whole process that EPA takes to work with our co-regulators in the state and in public utilities to keep PFAS out of our water. And then the third R is to remediate. That is where there is PFAS, where we do find it. How do we get rid of it? How do we clean it up? How do we dispose of it? So, for example, one of the proposed rules that EPA is working on right now is to categorize PFAS and its related compounds as a hazardous substance. And once that's done, then we can hold companies accountable to clean up when they've polluted our environment with PFAS.
So I really want to bring that home. And we're speaking with David Cash, who's the regional administrator for the EPA. We're talking about these forever chemicals, PFAS. So as of January 2021, there were 127 public water systems in Massachusetts alone that had reported problematic PFAS levels. So this is, in this case of this reporting, 20 parts per trillion. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, the new guidelines from the EPA break down. So there are several thousand of these PFAS mm-hmm. chemicals. Mm-hmm. There's two that the EPA is mm-hmm. tracking. One is called PFOA mm-hmm. and one is called PFOS. And mm-hmm. yes, I did have to practice those before the show. And now you guys are saying 0.04, mm-hmm. 0.02 yeah. parts per trillion.
Nearly zero.
So
it's safe.
But it's everywhere. 127 yeah. water systems, yeah. right? This is deeply disturbing stuff, David. And how do you even measure 0.02 parts per trillion?
Yeah, for some of these, it's going to be below what we can track, although science is advancing very quickly on this. And, you know, you express this as a huge risk, which is exactly why EPA needs to be taking it on now.
And let me just correct myself, 0.002.
Two, that's right, yes.
I got excited by the zeros.
It's a very small number, mm-hmm. and that's a cause for concern. It's a concern that we should have. So basically what the health advisories do is they provide drinking water system operators, states, our tribal partners, municipal officials with the scientific information that they need on health risks, so that they can consider whether or not action is needed. Because at the end of the day, they're the ones responsible. This, as I mentioned, the health advisories are the first step toward actual standards. We don't have yet standards. Some states do. The New England states actually have been leaders across the country in setting standards and monitoring and figuring out how big the PFAS problem is.
At one point, Massachusetts' standard was more strict than the EPA advisory level.
That is correct. And now our advisory is more strict. And we don't know where the standard will come out on. The health advisory focuses only on health impacts. Once we go to setting a standard, we take into account technical feasibility, costs, things like that. But it's going to be low.
So, David, what about if a listener wants to say, excuse me, Mr. David Cash, can I drink my water?
Yeah. So, the first question is to check with your public water utility.
So the answer might be no.
The answer, well, my guess is they would have heard from their utility if there was a major problem, and the utility would be doing upgrades and figuring out what kind of technology to put in place. And, you know, a fourth part, remember I mentioned those three yeah. parts.
There's a research, restrict, and remediate.
Yeah. A fourth part is billions of dollars that is coming in through the bipartisan infrastructure law that was passed in November. We've announced that at least in this year, $1 billion of 10 total billion over the next 5 years is going to go to small and disadvantaged communities so that they can invest in new technologies, filtering technologies, perhaps switching to a new water source. So, you know, we're combining the advisory with both the technical tools from EPA and revenue sources so that these utilities can invest in protecting their customers.
And of these 127 as of 2021 in Massachusetts, for example, are a disproportionate number of those disadvantaged communities?
That I don't know. We'd have to check with MassDEP on that. But I know that our staffs are working closely with our state partners on trying to identify how we can best leverage these funds so they can go to the communities that most deserve them. And, you know, we work really closely. A lot of people don't know and don't need to know the kind of bureaucracy of how a large federal agency works. But at the core of how EPA was structured in the 1970s and through today is as co-regulators with our state partners. I meet regularly with the commissioners from all the six states in New England. I meet regularly with the tribal leaders from our 10 federally recognized tribes. And there has not been a meeting that has not gone by without talking about PFAS. How we can work together. What are our strategies? How can we help federal investments hit the priorities that these utilities are looking for?
So in our remaining time, I want to ask a couple of broader questions.
Sure.
And one is your reactions as an administrator to the Supreme Court ruling that rolled back EPA power.
It's a bump in the road. There's so much on our plate that EPA is moving forward with in our air regs, in our climate change regs, in the investments that we're making through the bipartisan infrastructure law. We have a lot of tools that we're planning to use, all obviously focusing on what our legal authority is and staying within the restrictions that the Supreme Court has put down.
All right. So the second question, you might have noticed that we're having some wonderfully cool weather after some pretty serious heat waves.
I have noticed.
What's sort of the EPA lens on the heat waves? And is there anything particular in them you're working on, paying attention to, et cetera?
Yeah. So there are a couple of pieces. At the very high level, yet another indicator that climate change is already happening. these kinds of heat waves were predicted by climate scientists in their models, and now we're seeing them. So, you know, this is the reality now. On a more local level, whenever there are these heat waves, there always tends to be greater pollution events where we exceed some of our limits. And that's been true in New England in a variety of different places. And that's a huge concern because, again, those same areas are areas that have historically been overburdened by air pollution and underserved. And so we have a particular focus on how to address these kinds of, both through information, warnings, but also how we're focusing where, again, where we're investing EPA dollars and EPA resources to protect these communities. And I'll just give one example. Part of the bipartisan infrastructure law is going to go to clean school buses, electric school buses, and we're targeting disadvantaged communities to hit those dirty areas that have been overburdened. Because you should never stand on a street corner with your kid waiting for the school bus and worried what the kids are breathing in. Mm. So, you know, and we see spikes in asthma. We see spikes in emergency room visits when we have these hot days, not just because of the direct impact of heat, but because of the combined impact so that, you know, a kid with asthma is going to be more likely to have an attack during those events.
All right. David Cash is the regional administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency Region 1, which includes Massachusetts. Been in the job since February. David, thanks for coming back.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Good to have you.